Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 18 of the Golf Shake Podcast. My name is Ryan Rastall, PGA Professional at Howley Hall Golf Club in Leeds. I'm joined, as usual, by Mr. Matt Holbrook. Matt, how the devil are you this week?
I'm good. I'm very well golfed since the last podcast. Yeah, very well.
For me as well. I've played twice in the last week, which is just unheard of. Yeah.
Nice.
I've got more golf to go.
I'm off the back of 5 rounds in 6 days.
Very good. I've not got that many. But
And I'll tell you what, 2 of those were in shorts and T-shirt, which is the best thing.
Yeah, that is good. That is good. We've got tons to talk about this week, mate, to be honest. We're going to briefly rattle through what's gone on in golf over the past, 4 or 5 days, really, with the tournaments finishing yesterday. And also have a bit of a look ahead to next week. But we've got a couple of topics to talk about, haven't we, this week? Yeah, one of them is concerning the format of golf that you've played today. Was it the first time you played that, or one of the first times you played it?
I think in 14, 15 years of playing golf, I think it's only my second ever Texas Scramble.
Right, okay. And we're going to talk about not only the format, but also the types of scores that generally win Texas Scrambles, and the pretty good generally, mate, aren't they?
They were today.
Yeah, it's definitely good. But we're also going to talk a little bit about, I suppose, golf psychology is the way to kind of phrase it, but kind of the way that we think about playing golf on the golf course and kind of the pressure that we put on ourselves, etc. And kind of this has all come about with the victory of Wyndham Clark, really, on the PGA Tour at the weekend. So amazing victory. A player who looked like winning for a long time, and kind of by a lot of his peers' kind of admission, they're shocked he hasn't won already. You know, he's got some serious game and serious skills, but we're going to come along to that in a second. I'm going to leave the PGA Tour till the end, this kind of wrap up, but I'm going to start with DP World Tour. Did you watch much of what went on this week at Marco Simone?
Yeah, do you know what? I didn't get to see loads Thursday, Friday, but I did watch a fair bit Saturday and especially Sunday, and I loved it. It's my first proper time, I think, of kind of trying to take in Marco Simone as a Ryder Cup venue this year. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I thought there was so much risk and reward. I thought it was fair. Very similar, I felt, to Le Golf National in Paris, where it seemed like it could be quite wide open, and in terms of, you know, the elements could get quite windy. Just looked like a really good, solid golf course, you know. And obviously the scoring did reflect that. It wasn't, you know, wasn't silly scoring in terms of overall winner. So. I absolutely loved what I saw of the golf course. Really, really good.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Yeah, and it just and that was it. It wasn't just the fact that it played well, and it looked really well presented and really well turned out, and it was lots of water, a few short par fours, which we love, and I think it'll be a really good golf course for match play. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to, as always, watching the Ryder Cup. But now I've seen more and more of this golf course, even more so. Like you say, it is very much risk-reward, isn't it? There's lots of holes on there that you can have a bit of a pop at, and knowing that if you get it wrong, you're going to have a seriously difficult shot, aren't you? So, yeah, I mean, I'd imagine we're going to see some amazing shots in the Ryder Cup and some absolutely stunning ones, but also some absolute shockers as well, which is always good.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, it felt like it was a pretty good week for the European Ryder Cup team. I think Adrian Meronk was definitely somebody that a lot of people would have fancied to make the team anyway. But the fact that he goes and gets a job done on that course and picks up the win this week is, very impressive from him.
I'd almost go so far as to say he's kind of booked his,
I think he's in. Yeah, I do. I think he's there. I think, bar a catastrophe, he won't be there, to be honest. And rightly so, rightly so as well. He's such a solid player.
Yeah, he's certainly a guy I'd want as a partner. and certainly definitely on my team.
Yeah, it hits the ball. Well, the levers on the guy is so big, isn't he?
Yeah.
No, I do enjoy watching him play. So,
I mean, the biggest sort of regret for me, I think, over the or disappointment, should I say, was seeing McIntyre pull out. Really.
Yeah. Do we know why he?
I think it was a back injury, maybe. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
But yeah, hopefully he gets himself well, because after the conversation we had last week on the podcast, we really thought he was going to do quite well, didn't we? But there was obviously still a few players up there, the likes of Nicolai Højgaard. Great to see Marcus Armitage as well, put in a good finish. Eddie Pepperell up there, tied ninth, both of them. So good to see those guys making a bit of a charge. Eddie was saying that he'd actually practiced at Marco Simone on his TrackMan simulator at home quite a lot. So that's obviously helped him to put in a good finish.
It's definitely something in that.
It's nice to have one in your house, isn't it?
Yeah. I see my pick in Migliozzi absolutely ripped it up.
Oh, yeah.
Finished way back, didn't he? At least he made the cut, I suppose. But look, scoring was tough, right? So Moronk was the only guy to shoot four rounds under par, I believe. So it was tough, but yeah, enjoyed that.
Me too, it was really good. And did you watch much of the LPGA this week? I know we talked about it being a team format and everything. It actually looked pretty exciting. Obviously the Thailand team came to the fore, and it was, you know, a team that we talked about last week, you know, with the likes of Chittanagarn sisters Aria and Moria, Athletical, and also this is a surname that you need to pronounce as well, Matt, but do you want to give it a go?
No, absolutely not.
Patty Tavatamarkit, her name is. So yeah, I've been practicing that all day.
That's good. It's impressive.
Not a player I've actually heard of before, if I'm honest, but you know, looking at some of the golf that was played this weekend, I actually got to see her play a bit. Very, very impressive. And to be honest, all four of them are. You know, the Chittanagarn sisters particularly seem to kind of trade wins have done really, really well. But yeah, I mean, Thailand is in a very good place when it comes to ladies professional golf. And you know, we've obviously seen some on the DP World Tour as well, some men's golfers that have come out of Thailand that have done particularly well. But the ladies game over there looks extremely strong.
Yeah, no, it does. I didn't watch as much of this as what I wanted to. And I felt like it was just coverage, to be honest. I ended up watching just a lot more of the Italian, and
I must admit I had to do some searching around to try and find some
I think it's a tough week because it's a tough week for it to kind of go against the Italian Open and the Wells Fargo. When you've got a designated event on the PGA Tour, it's always going to kind of jump in front of anything coverage-wise. So, but I did watch a bit. Did catch a bit of it.
Obviously the Australian team were second, we kind of earmarked this as a tournament that we thought was going to go this way really last week, didn't we? When we were sort of talking about which teams we thought would sort of come to the fore really. And Thailand was definitely up there. And there were obviously some good performances from, you know, the likes of Australia to go up there. The Americans have always got a strong team. Sweden that we talked about with Nordqvist, Hedvall, Stark and Sagstrom were always going to be pretty strong. And I'm disappointed a little bit with England, if I'm honest. They were pretty rubbish. We did have two very strong players pull out at the last minute, which we kind of highlighted last week, and it seemed like a bit of a strange circumstance for them to do that as well. Obviously it's a tournament that is kind of growing in popularity, and this whole team format does seem quite good and quite popular, and long may it continue, really. It's exciting.
Absolutely. I think I'd second that, definitely.
So let's come back then. Wells Fargo, right? I'm leaving this to last. Not really because it's any, you know, lesser than the others. In fact, it's probably more really, but it's more to do with the kind of conversation around Wyndham Clark himself, really. So for those of you that don't know him, he's been on the PGA Tour for a while. This is his his first win. Sort of won from Xander Schauffele, who we all know, a serial winner on the PGA Tour, very, very good player and one of the top players in the world. But Wyndham Clark kind of was a bit of a tipping point in his career not long ago, where he was either thinking of giving up the game of golf completely or carrying on. And it was all about the mental side of the game that's kind of held him back. And I'm sure some of you out there will kind of identify with some of the feelings that he has had out on the golf course. I mean, those of us that don't have the ability, like Wyndham Clark, which is basically all of us listening to this podcast, will not really know 100% what it's like to be in that position. But we've all felt that kind of, you know, that feeling on the golf course when you hit a bad shot and you basically your whole world's tumbled down and you feel like it's the worst thing that's ever happened to you. When in reality, when we take a step back and look at it, we know that it's not quite that serious and we know that it's only golf. But in the heat of the moment, it can be a very different thing, can't it? And I don't know whether you've experienced it like that, Matt, at all. But
I've been through it. Absolutely. I think most amateur golfers that kind of care about their performance and want to get better have probably been through these types of struggles. But, you know, this is the thing I think that makes golf unique, in a sense that actually what he's gone through and what we go through is you know, very, very similar. It's just all about levels, isn't it? It's just, you know, one is just a lot better at golf than the other. And I know a friend of mine who I play golf with quite regularly. I won't mention his name, but I know that his good friend that played with us today does listen to the podcast and he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But a good example of this is, this guy, a friend of mine, had been struggling quite a lot lately with his game, and I felt like he was in his own head. He needed to get out of his own way. He was, you know, sending swing videos two or three times a week saying, "I think I've sussed it. I think I've got it," you know, and every time I found it. And then he gets out on the course and you're waiting for that one bad shot. And when that happens, you might as well at that point just pack up your stuff and go, because you feel like you can't get it back. And then we can get too technical sometimes, can't we? Right. And we can get caught up in swing faults and should I do this? Should I do that? Should I move this leg, that wrist, this angle, that? And I played with this guy yesterday and he shot his best round in quite a while. And it was quite refreshing to one, be there when he did that. But also what I noticed is there was no technical talk. There was no, "I think I'm doing this today. I think this is what I'm doing today." It was just almost like put a ban on technical talk. And sometimes you've just got to kind of just stand up to it, haven't you? And just whack it and, you know, almost not worry too much about it.
We know ourselves, generally when we've played our best rounds of golf and when it almost feels automatic, doesn't it? We don't even think about what we're doing. We literally just stand there, put the ball on the tee and hit it, and it seems to hit the fairway. And we just hit it. It seems to go somewhere near the green, and we seem to put well and chip all right. And you know, I've had rounds myself where I've played golf and I almost feel like I can't make a bogey. Do you know what I mean? Like you go out there and you'll just hit decent shot after shot after shot. They won't be world class. Don't get me wrong. They'll just be good enough to hit somewhere near a fairway, somewhere near a green, or just off a green, and you'll chip it or two put it, walk off with a par, see you later, and it just feels like you can't do anything wrong. Then other days, where you feel like you literally cannot hit one decent golf shot. And it's a very frustrating game in that regard. And certainly, you know, the sort of level of golf I've played, and it's by no means anywhere near any of the even satellite tours, let alone major tours like we're talking about, I would say there's a huge mental deficiency in my golf, I would say. And it's probably my biggest weakness when playing, and particularly in tournaments, is just not, I suppose, not letting go of anything negative that happens. You know what I mean? You kind of let it consume you and let it ruin
your time
in golf. When, you know, we realize any of you that have been to a top level golf tournament and followed good players around, and you even get, you know, on some of the coverage, you can even follow a particular three ball, can't you, at times? And if you've ever done that on Watch TV, you will see some of the most average golf shots from some of the best players in the world that you've ever seen. And particularly if they're not in contention that week, you know, they're not having a great week, you'll follow the likes of, you know, I remember watching some coverage of Justin Thomas at the Open Championship last year at St Andrews, and, you know, he made the cut and he did okay, but, you know, I watched him play some holes and you're just thinking, oh, I can do that. And certainly it didn't seem that far away. But I think the point I'm trying to get at is it's very hard to, or I find it very hard particularly, to let go of, you know, if something negative happens in a round of golf, and it might not even be a bad shot. It might be a good shot that you've hit that doesn't work out quite as good as you thought it should. Do you know what I mean? And you kind of just get very negative and down about things. And it sounds like that's where Wyndham Clark has been at times on the golf course, where, you know, he describes himself as quite a fragile person on the golf course and almost living and dying with every shot that he hits. And I can definitely identify with that. You know, if you hit a good one, you're top of the world. And if you hit a bad one, you're literally almost at the kind of doors of depression, really. And it does very much get to that state. I've certainly felt like that anyway. I don't know if
absolutely you ever
got to that sort of stage or not really.
Absolutely. So I think for amateurs, there's a couple of things. Firstly, there's a lot more going on in people's lives generally than what you will ever realize. And I think there was a time, it was 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago. And I've got absolutely no problem sharing this. Personal life wasn't great. It was, you know, I can't even remember at the time what it was about, whether it was, you know, kids, whether it was work. I generally can't remember, but golf is the place where I go to get away from it. And I think if it's starting to have a negative impact on me playing golf, then I really, really do struggle. I remember there was one time where it all just kind of come ahead. And I think I hit a ball out of bounds into the water. And my whole bag literally nearly followed it in. It was only because the bag was so heavy that I couldn't throw it as far. But that wasn't necessarily the golf, right? That was the golf was just a tipping point for me at that time. So,
yeah.
I mean, look, it's you're absolutely right. As human beings, sometimes we have this crazy ability to kind of just focus on the negative and not focus on the positive. But anyone that's listening to this, right, I'm gonna share something that I started doing maybe October, November time last year. And I'll be honest, it came from a Carl Morris Mind Factor podcast. And I can't remember the guy. It's an American chap that he was, he had on. And it's a really good podcast to listen to for kind of psychological aspect of golf and life in general sometimes. But he talks a lot about the a free shot diary. So after every round of golf I play, I get into the car and I've got a notepad and I just write down, not crazy detail, but just write down a couple of sentences about the three best golf shots I've hit that day. And what it's done for me is it's done two things, right? One, I'm almost got this this memory bank that's overflowing now with good shots and positive thoughts. You know, so I'm now not standing on the first fairway at my home course is a par 5. I'm not standing there with a 3 wood in my hand for my second shot thinking about what could go wrong. I remember the last time I was here, I left it under the bush or I hooked it into the thick. I'm standing there thinking, all I can think about is that time where I hit that perfect line, perfect shot, and it just rolled up to the front edge of the green. I'm thinking to myself, and I actually say it out loud sometimes, so much can go right with this shot. I can't wait to hit this shot because so many things can go right with this. This is going to look great when it's in the air and it's drawing towards the green or something like that. But it's just getting your mind into the right frame of mind, if that even makes sense. Now I've said it. But also with this free shot diary, sorry, I'll add this as well, right? What it's also done for me is I think we can be guilty of thinking, do you know what, I played crap today, you had 28 points, you blobbed 4 holes, whatever the case may be. But you know, when I sit in that car and I think, right, which 3 shots am I going to pick today? And you might have to pick 3 from 8, 9, 10, sometimes 12, 13, 14 good shots. And it's at that point I think to myself, do you know what? It's actually, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as what you think it is. You've hit 10, 12, 15 good shots today, and now you're struggling to pick three. And it's just, sometimes it is a reminder, I find, for me personally, it's, you know, you're not that bad at golf. You're actually pretty good. And that's always a nice thing to come away, regardless of what your score is. And I found it really useful for me. So give it a try if you're struggling.
Yeah, and, you know, for those of us that have, I mean, this is an interesting thing that I think it'd be great to hear back from some of the listeners about, really, because everyone's kind of approach to this is different, isn't it? So, you know, that some of us may have kind of dipped a toe into sports psychology and golf psychology particularly, and I guess most people's starting point is either Dr. Bob Rotella or Carl Morris stuff, isn't it, really? You know, you're either listening to things like the podcast that you've done or some of the Bob Rotella books that are out there that, you know, really help you. And certainly they're ones I've read in the past that kind of have helped. But, and I'm also, I mean, we've done some articles with John Finn as well on Golf Shake before. And he's someone who, when I did my PGA training, he was one of the lecturers on my PGA, and he was developing like a golf psychology program. And it was really interesting. I did a little bit of work with him as well, just to try and help, because for me, it's always been my weakest point of my golf game. Yeah. And there's many different factors for that. Some are, you know, like you've alluded to, off course factors that affect you. And I'll come back to that in a second, but I always think there's a massive, as a golf professional, people expect you to play well all the time, and they don't really understand that. I mean, people that listen to this podcast regularly will understand I don't play a hell of a lot of golf, and certainly not as much as I would like to. And I think that's all too familiar a story for many people in my profession, really. But all my members still expect me to shoot under par every time I go out and play.
Yeah.
And
I think
it's not the level I play, if I can shoot under par two or three times a season in a tournament, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I will probably play 15, 16 rounds in tournaments, maybe. Yeah. And if a quarter of those are under par, I'm going to be happy.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's all different levels. But I also think that, you know, potentially I'm at a level where if I did play a lot more golf and if my mental side of the game was better, I could play at a level quite a bit above where I am now. But I'm never going to play the amount of golf to do that. Does that make sense? Do you know?
It makes sense.
I think that you have to be not just playing lots of golf to make your swing mechanics and your scoring better. I also think the way that you process what happens on the golf course and the way that your brain processes those on the golf course and the way you think about the shots that you try and take on and maybe the ones that you don't take on, that also needs practice as well. And if you don't get that, you're almost back to square one when you don't play golf. And I certainly find that massively when I've not played for a stretch. I'll get back out on the golf course and generally I strike it good, but I'll score poor because I make bad decisions or I expect myself to hit more good shots than I probably will do in a round of golf and kind of almost self-destruct a lot of the time. And it's very difficult. And like I say, things away from the course as well, like you're saying about your, not just your personal life, but your work and things like that, that kind of get in the way and you can be in a bad mood sometimes. You know, I played a tournament last week where, and this is a massive pet hate of mine now, and I get why they do it. And so a lot of the tournaments I play in now, they don't use scorecards anymore, right? So they use Golf Genius or something like that. I absolutely hate it when I turn up and I have to use that because, one, I have to have my phone on, and I hate that because every single time I go to my phone, I've got another 10 emails that I need to answer or a missed phone call from somebody that wants a grip putting on a bloody 7-iron in a week's time. I just hate that about it. And
on that, right, because I understand that. I'm someone that I don't mind having my phone on me. I use the England Golf app as I go.
Yeah.
But I can understand that if you are somebody that can kind of get dragged away from what you're trying to do, it can be quite difficult. Is there no way that you could switch and put your phone on flight mode, for example, and still use the app? So Or is there somebody else? Yeah. Can somebody else in the group do it?
No, because you've almost got to have it like I'm scoring for somebody, they're scoring for me, and someone okay. else is scoring for somebody.
Yeah.
And unless you've got your phone on like normal, if you like, so not on flight mode, it's not sending the information back to the people doing the scoring. So they
because they want it live. Yeah,
exactly. So you can't really. But it's a huge pet hate of mine, and it's something, you know, I'm one of these people, I don't know if there's many other people out there, that when you look at your phone and you see that little red circle in the corner of like your inbox or your missed calls thing, I've just got to deal with that and sort it out straight away. I can't leave it. And I'm just wired that way, unfortunately, that I just have to deal with that. And it's a way of me decluttering my brain because I've dealt with it and it's gone. Mm. Whereas if I don't, the entire round of golf, I turned my phone off the other day, and this is a tournament that I didn't have to use, like an online scoring system. And when I turned my phone back on, it was almost worse because I had about 70 emails in my inbox. It was mental. So I don't know which is worse, really. But I would like to just turn it off and get it out of the way, probably, is the way that I would want to be. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there's so much. Yeah, I almost think it's the most important part of playing golf well is being sound of mind, I suppose, and kind of going through your processes and kind of, you know, just being comfortable in what you're doing. And you know, you've said that, you know, out on the golf course, you know, things can kind of disrupt you very, very easily, and they certainly can do to me. It only takes, you know, a couple of poor swings and a couple of poor shots to get me pretty close to the edge, really.
Yeah. So my next question to you is, how do you best deal with that personally? Because I look at somebody like a Tyrrell Hatton character, right? So he's a good case study for this sort of thing, because I know he's someone that divides opinion with some of his outbursts and the way that he deals with things. I would never sit and say, I think he's doing that wrong or right, because he's X number in the world. He's won X amount of millions of dollars. So whatever he's doing works for him. I am a believer of letting it out, because I think the longer you keep it in for, the more bad thoughts and bad feelings that you're going to harvest and keep inside of you. You know, what that looks like, whether that's a scream, whether that's of late I've developed this habit of just chucking my ball into a bush if I've free parted or if I've made a dirty double bogey somewhere, you know, the ball just disappears very quickly. But after that, I feel like I've almost got it out my system. You know, because as I say, if you hang on to that, it can develop into something a lot worse. It can develop into a club chop, a club snap. You know, what could you do? Do you do something? Have you got?
Well, I mean, what things I've done in the past to try and help are taking more time between shots, because I tend to play very quick and don't maybe give the shot that I'm playing the attention that I should be giving it. So I try and almost take an extra 10 or 15 seconds before I hit it, just to, even if it's just to stand there and do nothing really, but almost to try and slow myself down. That's something that I've tried before. Actually chatting with the people that I'm playing with, I find helps massively. Like, this is one thing. I tend to play a lot better when I'm playing like a pro-am, where I've got three people that I can generally that I know and I can have a good chat with, and you know, we can have a bit of banter and you know, take the mickey out of each other and stuff. I generally play better in that scenario than I do in an all professional tournament, because a lot of people just don't speak for 18 hours, and I'm the sort of person that I want to chat with people. I want to find out what they, you know, what they do, where they work at, what their club's like, how they get on. And some people don't want to talk, and I get that, that's fine, but for me it just helps kind of settle me down. I think it also, this is very easy in professional golf to almost have kind of imposter syndrome a little bit as well, where you're playing with people that you perceive to be better than you at golf. And you realize it when you get chatting with them, and when you watch them, and they're not.
No, they're just normal people.
Yeah, exactly. And they,
you know, they wee and poo. I heard a guy say to me once, they wee and poo like everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. And you put these, and I'm talking at a regional level as well as like national and tour level. You know, I've played a lot of golf in my life with people like Marcus Armitage and you know, I play golf with him, and he obviously hits it wonderfully and scores very, very well, and he's extremely impressive. But there's never a time that I've played and thought I couldn't hit that shot. Do you know what I mean? I've always thought, yeah, I could do that, but I don't. Do you know what I mean? I can hit pretty much any shot that you like, but can I do it consecutively in a round of golf over 4 days and make that many birdies and that little mistakes and be mentally that strong? No, I can't. So that's why I'm at the level I'm at. But
do you know what I find interesting? Like I've played golf with you. I've played golf with good golfers as well. and I don't mean that. That was a sly dig. So what I find is when I play golf with Sam, for example, my coach, who, for people that don't know, played on the Euro Pro Tour for a few years, a couple of years back qualified and played in the Open. When I play golf with him, right, I'm not in awe. I don't look at him and think, oh my God, look how far he hits it. Because to me, that's just Sam, and Sam, that's what Sam does. And then I will play with him, but I'm always so engrossed in what I'm doing. I could go and play golf with someone, they could be 10 under gross, and I wouldn't know about it until the end, because I'm so kind of tunnel visioned in my game and what I'm trying to achieve. I've always said that I don't know how people in my group are playing. You know, if they're holding good parts or if they're, hitting good shots, you know, you see them. But in terms of somebody else putting a score together, like, I'm just totally oblivious to it. Totally oblivious to it. I'm not good at doing what you said about kind of relaxing, and, you know, I can very much go out for 3.5 hours and just not say anything and just kind of enjoy my own company. And if I feel like I'm playing well, I almost don't want to take myself out of that kind of mini zone.
It's like a
golf swing, right? Everyone's different. It's I do find it interesting to what other people.
I would say I very seldom think about anything technical to do with my technique on the golf course at all.
No, I'm never thinking technical stuff.
But the mental side, I just find like I've said, very tough. And I find that if I'm quiet and I don't talk to people, I just get massively inside my own head, and it's really a lot worse. Do you know what I mean? Because you're kind of enforcing some of the negative things you'll say to yourself and kind of almost beat yourself up internally even more. But I find that if you have a chat to people, you kind of don't do that as much.
Yeah.
At times I've been on the golf course and, yeah, I've lost my temper, and, you know, particularly when I was a lot younger, chucking clubs and doing stuff like that was a very sort of regular thing that I would do. I would say I don't really do that at all anymore. I have been on the golf course at times and kind of not liked the person that I was playing golf. Do you know what I mean? And it's the one, like you say, it's the place you go to kind of relax and sort of let all of what's going on in your life disappear. For me, at times, golf has almost amplified the problems that I've had elsewhere, and kind of I've not dealt with them off the golf course. I take them to the golf course, and it just destroys me really quickly. Do you know what I mean? Because that's the place where it all comes out, and it's, you know, you've almost been holding in that frustration for such a long time. You get out on the golf course and you hit one poor drive, and you literally have a meltdown. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I've been in the past. But I feel like over the last, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 years, I've learned to deal with that on the golf course better. That being said, I reckon this time last year is the worst place I've ever been on a golf course in my entire life. I reckon for a 2 month period at this time last year, I was kind of wondering whether I would even bother playing professional tournaments ever again, because I just hated it so much. And the way it made me feel. But now, you know, I've got a tournament this week that I'm massively looking forward to playing. And it's the same one that I probably felt the worst that I'd ever felt on the golf course last year. It's at the same course, which is one that I just, for some reason, just don't really see a way of playing that well. It's one that I don't think I've ever really played that well around. I've played okay at times, but It's just a really strange golf course I find to score on. But
where is it?
It's a place called Huddersfield Golf Club. It's a place called Fixby.
Okay.
Played loads of times in my life. And sometimes, like I say, I remember playing it at university and shooting under par easily. Yeah.
Try a remix of a three shot diary where before you go and play, just make a note of all the good shots you can remember hitting around there. See if it makes a difference.
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, I have played decent. I mean, it's a course that you should score really well round because it's not particularly difficult. I've just made it very difficult for myself in the past. And generally, you know, at this time of year, I'm going in having not played a lot of golf. Do you know what I mean? So that doesn't help. But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing on Wednesday and see how it goes. But yeah, I've not really got any expectations. But my only kind of thing I want to get out of it is to mentally be all right for 18 holes.
Yeah.
so yeah, we'll see.
A little quote for you from Dr. Bob Rotella. Golf is not a game of perfect. I like this one. I'm not going to lie to you. I've actually got a few of these saved on my my Instagram. So if anyone follows me on Instagram, you go to my Instagram profile and there's highlights, which I don't think people look at that often. But one of my highlight reels on Instagram is some snippets from Golf is not a game of perfect. And whenever I'm struggling, I sometimes just go through there and just read the bits that I picked out. And the first one, it says, anyone who plays championship golf will tell you that at least half the battle occurs inside the golfer's mind.
Absolutely right. And this is the thing I think that's taken me the longest to kind of get my head around. You know, I've played a lot of professional tournaments, and in my head, to play well at golf, you have to hit good shots all the time. And let me tell you absolutely don't. Some of the people I've played with as a professional have been some of the worst ball strikers you've ever seen. And I mean, there's guys I teach at the golf club off 10 that strike it better, maybe even higher handicap. But these guys get it round in 68, 69, pretty much at will and almost at ease at times. And you wonder how they do it. If I struck it as bad as they did for 18 holes, I'd be shooting mid-80s to 90 every time. Yeah.
But then all it takes sometimes is just to...
Golf is how well you strike it. It's about how many it takes you to get in the hole.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Ultimately, you know, it actually doesn't matter sometimes. As you can have... lad I played with, he has been a scratch golfer. This was Sunday, yesterday. I think he's off. I think his index is about 2-3 at the moment. He shot level par yesterday. And I didn't even realize it was that good. But on reflection, he holed 5 putts probably outside 20, 25 foot.
Yeah.
And when you look back at those 5 putts, you think, okay, shot level par. If those 5 putts don't drop, he shot 5 over. And it's then a bang average round of golf for him. And sometimes that's all it takes. It's literally all it takes sometimes.
It's not really a lot that needs to happen for you. You know, we all know some days we go out there and feel like nothing happens. And, you know, I've had some of my worst ball striking rounds and shot good scores and some of my best and shot bad ones. So it doesn't really equate. One doesn't equate to the other. And that quote from Max Homer that I've seen quite a lot, where he said that basically, you know, particularly at the level I'm at, and you know, he kind of empathized with it at the level he's at as well. You know, you kind of almost feel like you're one shot away from giving the game up completely or thinking you can be on the PGA Tour. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It can be like that at times. You know, I've certainly stood on the golf course and hit drives and pitches and iron shots and thought, bloody hell, that was world class. And then other times I've thought, my God, you look like you play off 28. Do you know what I mean? And it can be sometimes one shot after the other. And we all know how frustrating this game can be at the best of times. But I guess I'm going to throw it out to everyone out there listening that, you know, tell us some of the things that you've done to help you, you know, almost calm down on the golf course, maybe play your best golf. Is there any kind of tactics that you employ? I think it would be great to hear. Certainly, personally, I want to hear them because I want them to help me. But yeah, it may be able to help some of the other listeners out there. So we'd be very, very interested in that, wouldn't we, Matt?
Sharing is caring, as far as this is concerned.
And talking about sharing, you shared a game of golf today with three of your pals in a Texas Scramble. We've kind of alluded to the fact that you played that earlier on in the podcast, but talk to us all about it, mate. How did it go? How did you play? What sort of score did you have?
So what I'm going to say right at the start is, so this was my fifth round of golf in 6 days, and it's been quite refreshing because the last four rounds of golf I've played fairly well compared to how I had been playing. Following a lesson with Sam last Friday,
I saw that. Yeah, actually, you kind of going quite well after that.
Yeah, and I have. It's given me loads of confidence off the tee, especially with with the driver. And I'm hitting it straighter. I'm hitting it longer, and I'm able to, you know, give things a good hit. So I played Wednesday morning quite early for me, almost too early, about 6 o'clock, because I just wanted to get out on the golf course. And I appreciate you haven't asked me this, but I'm telling you this anyway, because it all leads to today. I think I shot 7 over with a couple of doubles. And then I played at Felixstowe and shot 4 over. And then I had a 6 over and a 5 over Saturday and Sunday. So all four of my last rounds have all been counters since the lesson.
Yeah, pretty steady stuff.
It looks great for Sam's social media as well, because he can share that stuff. But I have to credit him, because, you know, I think I've missed no more than 2 or 3 fairways per round in the last 4 rounds. And for me, that's key. If I can keep my ball in play, I'm going to score pretty well. So that led us to the Texas Scramble today, where it was actually quite nice to, one, almost not have my own personal battle and card in my hand, or putting a score in for my handicap, which is what I do it for. And it was good fun, actually. It was my team was myself, two Daves and a Simon. Simon is a regular podcast listener. Hello, Simon. I know you're listening. So Dave chipped in from probably about 30 yards short of the green on our par 5 first for eagle.
Nice.
Then Dave hit a lovely tee shot on the second, which is a par 3, and hold the putt. So he made that birdie all on his own.
So 3 under after 2.
3 under after 2. Our third hole is, I'm not going to talk you through 18 holes, by the way, but this is fun. Our third hole is, I think it's stroke index 3. It's just quite a tough tee shot. It's quite tight. It's an uphill par 4. The green is then long and narrow. And I hit probably my best tee shot of the day up there, really long, and then hit a good 9-iron into the green to about 12, 15 foot. We hold that putt between us. So we're now 4 under through 3, and we're absolutely rocking. We're thinking, right, this is us today. We then just kind of, I mean, look, we also keep in mind that we have to use 4 tee shots from each player.
Yeah.
So we're trying to work out tactically. What we didn't want to do is, after the fast start, we didn't want to kind of start panicking about, who's left here, who's left there. So we was trying to kind of manage that as well. And then we just played steady golf. We parred the next 5 holes, 5 holes, 6 holes. So we was 4 under gross on the front. Probably didn't give ourselves any really good looks at birdie, to be honest, on the rest of the front nine. And then we hold a good putt on the 12th. Then it starts getting into that territory of, oh, should we use this person's drive here, that person's drive here, because we wanted to make sure. And we did that. We managed that really well. We got to the as we played the 16th, we'd all had 4 tee shots each. So that was absolutely perfect, which meant that, you know, we was able to kind of just let loose and just go for it down 17, which is, I hit a really good tee shot down 17. We birdied that. And then I stuck it really close, actually, on the 18th, but unfortunately we didn't hold the putt. So all that led to a gross 63. So it's a par 69, my course. So we shot 6 under gross.
Yeah.
We've literally, with, you know, the eagle and 4 birdies, no bogeys. And then we had 7 shots to come off that. So we shot a net 56.
Okay.
And I thought that was pretty good. I didn't think it was going to win.
I would have said the start was very good.
Yeah. We needed to give ourselves more birdie chances.
Yeah, I would reckon somewhere around 20 under is generally what you'd expect.
Yeah. So net 51 won. So that's 19 under after the handicap.
Yeah, okay.
So ultimately, I mean, look, we finished 7th. We did okay, but we were, you know, 6 shots off the lead.
Yeah.
Five shots off the lead.
It's a while since I've played a Texas Scramble with, you know, people with higher handicaps, but from when I've played with other either scratch or category one players, I've always thought you've got a birdie every hole, and then eagle the par fives really is kind of the way I've looked at it. So, yeah, I reckon 18 to 20 would be kind of where I would expect to be.
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I that was a lot lower than what I was expecting. Like I say, I knew our 56 would get beat, but I thought it would get beat with a 55, 54, not a 51. And you're saying 20 under. That would be crazy.
We had at Howley, I think 22 under one.
Yeah, see, I just think that's crazy. That's crazy scoring. But then I say that I don't know, you know, I don't really have much to get rid of much to compare it to. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be looking. It depends on the mix of handicaps, I suppose, doesn't it? But if you're having seven shots off, would you kind of expect to be, I don't know, 8, 9 under, 10 under maybe? Yeah, probably 10 under would have been a decent score for you boys, particularly with the start that you had, I think.
After the start, we were disappointed that we didn't give ourselves better birdie chances.
Yeah.
So
really, you'd have had to shoot 12 under gross, yeah. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, so, yeah.
I suppose, particularly when you've started with eagle, birdie, birdie, I mean, that's well within the realms of what you're capable of, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, it's a tough little golf course, you know.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is another thing we can throw out to the listeners, I suppose, isn't it? You know, Texas Scramble Golf, do you love it? Do you hate it? What sort of scores win at your club? What's the best score you've ever had out there in a Texas Scramble? Let us know. I remember as a kid when we played back at Sleaford Golf Club, I think it was me, my brother and 2 other guys who were, I think, combined our handicaps were about 3. And I think we shot 20 or 21 under, which is kind of, yeah, I guess it's kind of what I would expect. But yeah, I mean, maybe I don't know. Let us know. But yeah, is it a format that you're going to play again then, Matt? Yeah?
I definitely would play it again.
Good. Enjoyed it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Good. And I guess
absolutely.
It's nice not just playing medal stroke play golf all the time, isn't it? It's nice.
I said last week after playing the mixed greensomes that actually did a lot for me in terms of confidence. Today was just more about having fun. You know, like I do sometimes need to remind myself that golf's a hobby and I do it for fun because I'm so engrossed in it and because I work hard at it. And, you know, it's not something that comes very naturally to me. If I put it down for a month or two, I'm God knows what level I'd come back at, like genuinely. So it is nice to, you know, just almost go back to just having fun. Do you know what I mean? It was a good time. We had a bit of banter. You know, whoever it is that's, you know, somebody, it's a good tee shot, and then the next person can hit it even further and harder. And you know, they've only been able to do that. I took great satisfaction in reminding the guys that out of the 6 under we shot, that 5 of those birdies, well, the eagle and 3 birdies, all come off my tee shots. So make of that what you will. But, you know, it was just the four of us just had a good time. It was just, yeah, the sun was out, shorts and T-shirts was out, legs starting to get a bit of colour in again. And it's, you know, watch the, even little things like the colour of the golf course at the moment is just, you know, it's just it's starting to look pure again. And yeah. I know this weekend it's going to be in pretty good condition. We've got, I think it's the girls' ladies' Suffolk County Championships are being held at Michael's this weekend.
Okay, but cool.
Annoyingly, I've had the lesson. The weather's changing. I'm playing well, and now I'm going to go on a break.
Yeah,
for a couple of weeks.
Oh, are
you? Yeah. So,
you'll be chomping at the bit to get out there. I'm sure you'll be going to the range and practicing though, Matt.
No, so we're away. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I can't say too much, but all will be revealed in a couple of weeks when I'm back. So you won't hear me for the next couple of weeks.
I know all about where you're going.
Right? You know, yeah. There's
which will be awesome. But
I'm looking forward to this little break. It's enforced but a chosen one for a reason.
You'll be ready and round when you come back.
Yeah. And well, it's top secret.
It is, absolutely. I'm sure you'll fill us all in when you come back. But talking about what's going on next week, right? So let's talk a little about this. Just do a very quick run through of what's going on in the world of golf. So LPGA, they are at the Cognizant Founders Club in New Jersey. Any kind of thoughts about this tournament, Matt? Have you looked at it? Have you seen who's won there in the past? Have you seen any kind of history on the event? I mean, just looking at it, Jin Young Koh's won there twice last year. Minji Lee won. Lexi's done well there before. Anyone that you think might contend? I mean, I've named three there that you would have probably picked anyway, but let's pick somebody else. Come on, who do you think? You're at a loss, aren't you?
Sorry, I'd put myself on mute. I was eating a sweet. Are the Corders in the field?
I believe so.
Yeah, let's go Nelly Corder. it's easy pick, but the three
easy pick, Matt.
I know, but that's because of the three that you mentioned. I would have, and you told me not to mention. I would have probably gone Minji Lee.
I think Jin Young Koh would have been my pick, I'm not. Again, I think they're fairly lazy ones, really. I'd like to maybe pick someone that is kind of going to come out of the blue, maybe.
I need to do better, to be honest, at being prepared for these questions, because I know that they're going to come. And I'm not prepared for them. Not as well as what I should be.
Because you're eating sweets, Matt, that's why.
I know, but the wife dropped a pack of Haribo bubblegum bottles.
Bubblegum bottles.
Yeah, it's like there's levels to sweets as well, right? And we're talking like this is top level. What about Lydia Ko?
The drumstick squashies, they're like the best, surely.
They're okay.
They're up there, aren't they?
Yeah, squashies, don't mind a squashy. Let's go Lydia Ko.
Lydia Ko, you reckon?
Yeah.
Very good. Right, let's move DP World Tour. We're off to Belgium this week in the Sudal Open. Obviously, there's some players that have done fairly well last week up there. Adrian Ortegi being one that jumps out at me. But it's also, I reckon, a decent each-way bet for anyone out there might be Alex Fitzpatrick, who's gonna play this week. So, I'm maybe going to have a cheeky little flutter on him each way. I don't know. Marcus is playing quite nicely, trending in the right direction. That might be someone that may be worth it as well. And Eddie Pepperell put in a decent finish last week too. But
I was just about to say, actually, I like Eddie Pepperell this week. I think he's shown some really good signs of a bit of form.
I did notice as well he's got one of the new burner, like mini drivers in his back as well.
Yeah. And I'd say someone else always seems to play quite well. David Law.
Scottish
guy. Yeah, quite like that as well.
I've been talking about him all year, and he just seems to be kind of the best each-way bet every week that you can possibly have, because he's always there or thereabouts, but not actually getting there to win. So
Same as Marcel Siem.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a head to head that guy's got.
Oh, absolutely wonderful, isn't it? PJ Tour this week, Byron Nelson, AT&T. It's not one of the, what do you call them, elevated events, but it's still got a pretty decent field in it. Any kind of thoughts on this one, Matt?
Tyrrell Hatton.
I'm taking another week off by the look of it. So,
give it Tyrrell out. Hatton.
Tyrrell Hatton. I'm going to go Spieth, I think.
Well, I went Spieth last week and he just MC hammered on me, didn't he?
Spieth and Cameron Young.
I like Cameron Young. I keep calling out. I keep saying Jason Day because I do think he's going to win again soon. You know.
Yeah. Do you know what? I saw him on the entry list today, and I was thinking the same. We have got a LIV tournament this week as well in Tulsa. Is it the US Open next week?
Yeah. Because it's while I'm away.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I reckon I'm going to go just purely because of that. I'm going to say I think Brooks is going to win the LIV event. But Taylor Gooch is up there for a hat trick. So you never know. But I'm going to go Brooks.
Cool.
Hopefully he does well. But yeah, I mean, it's exciting. We're running into major season now. Obviously, we've had the Masters a few weeks ago, but with the USPGA, US Open and the Open Championship being the final one now on the major calendar, all within the
actually that's mad, isn't it, that it's the second major next week.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then
like
I say, we're all done by the middle of July, which just seems to me like there's so much more of the year. But I suppose now that we've got the FedEx and we've got the race to Dubai that need sort of finishing before we even have the Ryder Cup, so we've got plenty of great golf to look forward to. But yeah, that's what we've got in the world of golf this week, and fingers crossed for some more fantastic golf and more for us to talk about, or more for me to talk about next week. Thank you very much for everyone for listening. Matt, you have a good few weeks away. I was just going to let slip where you were going then. But
you know, it's fine because I'll be honest. Like, I don't think the kids are listening to this podcast.
I'm pretty sure they're not, and for God's sake, they shouldn't be. But yeah, have a great time away, mate, and we will.
Thanks.
We'll hear from you when you get back.
Yeah, nice. I miss you already.
Speak to you all soon, and thank you for listening.